she was, as she had been told, in the pre-heaven, and so she thought, in the pre-heaven, you don't work and you don't go to school. The Madonna will come and then she will raise you up and everything will go its right way. And then she met these nobles again. They went from one house to the other and it seemed to her as if they were in a hurry. These nobles smiled at Maria again, but now she didn't dare wave back or even smile. Alberto had forbidden her to do so. Now she was very uncertain. She didn't like the school thing and so she thought, perhaps they're smiling at me so that they can take me with them after all, and Alberto too. And what would Alberto say if he still had to go to school? Now she went back and told him everything she had experienced and that there were schools for adults like Alberto and her. There were no children at all. She had not seen any children, she had seen some animals, but the adults must go to school. Don't you think it's good if we go to school too? Shouldn't we sign up to go to school too? Alberto did not agree. No, now I'm in heaven, he said, and I want to measure the kingdom of heaven. So he was content on his bench, just as in human life. He had never worked much, and he didn't want to know anything about learning. He was afraid he would embarrass himself. He couldn't write his name, yes, but nothing else, and he couldn't read either. So he said to Mary, no, it could be that the Madonna simply makes it possible for us. The Madonna can come and in one word she can declare, you should be able to write and read, you should know everything and be able to do everything. The Madonna can do that, claimed Alberto, and so we are waiting for the Madonna. She will save us. The Madonna will give us what we need. Maria was a little skeptical and said, you know, we actually pray far too little. In the kingdom of heaven you have to pray. And the Madonna will never come to us if we don't pray. We also have to pray to Christ and we have to ask God to take care of us. Alberto didn't think that was necessary, he said, we are in the kingdom of heaven and we couldn't have it any better than here. Nobody bothers us, we're not really hungry, and when we feel like having something to eat, the grapes are there. He was so used to sitting on the bench and sunbathing in his life, and so the idea of A.A. not being allowed or able to do that anymore was difficult for him. And so they always sat on that bench, and there was always some kind of conversation. But when these noble figures passed by, they walked quickly into the house. Now they thought they were safe in the house. But they were wrong. Because now the two noblemen who always walked past and always smiled at them so kindly came into the house and greeted them. Maria was actually delighted because she thought they were so beautiful, but Alberto was not. These two beings were friendly, greeted them and said that they should also decide to come to the village to find out which school they were going to and where they could find a place. Maria looked at Alberto. He was not enthusiastic and said that it was not necessary for them to go to school. They were happy as it was. They had been used to poverty and modesty their whole lives and wanted to continue to be that way. The angels, however, did not seem to agree and said, yes, we ask you to come with us sometime when we pass by. Then we will show you the schools and then you must start learning. They said their kind goodbyes and left again. Alberto was not at all happy with this. He thought that there should be no compulsion in heaven and that people should be able to live as they want, only then would life be heavenly, but under no circumstances should there be any kind of compulsion. That was what Alberto thought. But Mary prayed that the Madonna would show her the way she should go and that the Madonna would come to her if it was not too much to ask. The Madonna did not come, but the two noble beings came again. Alberto refused to go because he was afraid he would embarrass himself, and he simply did not want that. He was content and happy with the little, the modest things that were there. And so he said, please let me go. I don't need to become so intelligent and I don't need to go to school. I'm happy as it is. And the angels said, yes, it won't be long before one of your sons comes. There are three beds in your house, so he can use one of them when he comes. It was the eldest son who was to come. His name was Carlo. The angels of God brought him to his parents' house. At first he too was very dazed, sleepy, tired, and the angels laid him on this bed. He should rest, and so they said to Maria and Alberto, you can keep watch over him, and when he wakes up, he should stay here in this house for a while, look at the surroundings and try to settle into the new world. Then we will have tasks for him too, and then all three of you can go to school together. Well, that's what happened. They brought them this Carlo, and at first he was tired and not really able to take in his surroundings. They let him sleep for a while. Alberto and Maria watched over him and were there when he woke up from this sleep and opened his eyes. They said to him, you can be with us. We are in a pre-heaven. Our life here is heavenly. And they were happy to have at least this Carlo with them, of their many children. It took him a while to get used to this environment. Then he looked around and walked back and forth outside the house and saw this beautiful surroundings, the garden, the grapes, the bench in front of the house. But then he paused and asked, are you all alone here in the house? And is this really heaven where you live? Where are the angels of heaven? Is there no music here? And Alberto and Maria said, yes, we are only in the pre-heaven. There is music in heaven. But we have to wait until the Madonna comes to get us. Carlo understood that too. But the parents did not say anything about the village or the school, because Carlo had not been educated either. So they stayed together for a while and were particularly happy to have at least one son with them. Of the many children they had on earth, Carlo was now the only one who was allowed to stay with them. Carlo adapted quickly to this environment, because he thought it was all too similar to the earth. He had his own household and children, some of whom were already grown up. As he walked back and forth in front of the house, he saw these large fields and probably recognized the village in the distance, and he asked Maria, what does this village look like? She answered, you can go there yourself and find out. Carlo claimed that he had plans, there was so much space here, and his children and his wife would also go to heaven one day, and so he was going to build a house for them. There was enough space, and he wanted to get ahead of others. He wanted to build a house for his family. Maria said, yes, I don't think you can do that. Alberto also expressed his concerns, but Carlo was not convinced. There is enough space here, and if I don't claim this space, then others will. That's how it was on earth, that's how it is, first come, first served. And his parents, Maria and Alberto, could only be astonished. Perhaps Carlo is right, they thought. Perhaps we should have been more diligent. They had done nothing but sit on the bench. But Carlo now took action. He wanted to build a house and chose a place. He said, since there is no one to claim this land, I will do it. And I will take as much as I want, because I want to take advantage of the opportunity. I want to get rich. That's how it's done. I will build one house after the other. There is so much space, and I will be paid for it. My work must be paid for. So Carlo spoke, without considering where he would get the materials to build it. Then he also wanted to go to the village, and he asked, are there no donkeys here that you can ride? Do I have to walk to the village? Yes, said the two of them, there are no animals here. We haven't seen any donkeys here. And Alberto said, if you are interested in the village, you just have to make an effort and go there on foot. Of course I'll go to the village, he replied, because I have to find out how the material is. I want to buy it. Maria had reservations and said, how are you going to buy material? We are poor. How are you going to pay? Yes, I'll give them a piece of land and they'll give me the material in return. Alberto and Maria started to think, actually, the land doesn't belong to anyone. There is no one there to claim it. So much land and it's all empty. Surely you could build a house there, and the hardworking should be rewarded. They were just a bit simple-minded in their thinking, they had been that way as people and they remained that way even after death. Now Carlo set off and went to the village. First of all he wanted a donkey, because he would have had to use it to transport material. But now it seemed to him that there were no traders who offered donkeys like that. There were animals, dogs, cats, birds and all sorts of other small animals, but they all seemed to have their owners, and no matter who he asked who this or that animal belonged to, he never got a proper answer, no one knew. So he couldn't do anything. He saw the creatures walking back and forth in this village, and he also saw the schools. He saw them sitting in the rooms and saw the teachers talking to the students. Yes, that made him a little suspicious, but he thought that a visit to a school like that was not necessary for him. But he didn't dare to talk to anyone in more detail. First, he just wanted to feel around and see what the village looked like. He noticed that there were very nice houses there. They were all just one floor, one story, simple, everything very simple, and there were modest gardens. But he didn't make any demands. He was also aware of the fact that he was a little bit too keen on the quality of the houses. H was not used to anything better. So he was content and did not think about the fact that heaven should actually be in all its glory. His thoughts were still too tied to earthly things and he had only one plan, to build a house, after all he had lived in a half-ruined hut on earth. Now he had enough land at his disposal and he thought that somehow he would manage to build such a one-story house. It did not seem to be difficult to him. But he went home empty-handed and could not have a closer conversation with anyone. Maria asked, "Have you brought anything with you? Don't you have a donkey?" "No, not yet, but that will come." While Maria and Alberto always lived with the uncertain feeling that they would be called to school, these appointments did not materialize for the time being. The two were quite happy about this. Because Carlo did have plans, he wanted to build a house and they thought that they should not deny him this, it would be understandable that the other relatives would come here too. Carlo then went back to the village, and this time he had enough courage to ask someone who crossed his path, "Could you get me some materials? I want to build a house." The man looked at him in surprise and asked him, "You want to build a house? You want to build a house? You haven't been here long. Are you a stranger here?" "I live with my parents. I'm not a stranger here. I'm just a stranger in this village, but I live very close by." "Well, why do you want to build a house if you live with your parents?" asked the other. "Yes, I have to build a house for my relatives who are still coming. And then I want to become a respected man. I want to work hard here, because there's enough land here."
"Ah, you think you could just build a house?" asked the man in surprise.
"Well, why not?"
"Yes, I'm sorry, I can't give you anything because I don't have anything. And I don't know where you could get materials for a house. And anyway, you can never build a house, it's built by others."
"By others?"
"By which others?" asked Carlo. And he was told,
"Oh, by which others? By those up above, of course." But Carlo didn't understand this language, he didn't understand who was meant by those up above. And so he went home again and was disappointed that he hadn't achieved anything. He slowly came to the realization that it wasn't that easy to get this material, and that there was enough space in the house where he lived with his parents. After all, on Earth people were used to many people living together in a small space. Slowly he gave up on the plan, but he was unsure and thought, "I'll wait, wait, the opportunity will surely come." And one thing was certain for him, no one else was allowed to build, because he and his parents had been here first, or so he believed. And then they came again, these nobles, and asked all three of them to come with them to the village. There were three of them, so to speak, to be a support for each of them, and they were so friendly and so loving. But their friendliness did not succeed in persuading these three to come with them. And so these nobles left again without having accomplished anything, because they were not strict. But things turned out differently, because these three nobles naturally passed on the news that there were three unruly beings in the house who did not want to go to school or obey anything. And then they had to send other beings over who were less friendly, but much more serious. And so three others came into the house, also a support for each of them, so that they could accompany each one individually. They went into the house and here they were not at all enthusiastic. After all, they believed that they were living in heaven with this freedom and not being bothered.
The serious beings came and took the three of them with them without further ado, and there was no argument. They were led into the village, and there was not much to talk about on the way, because these three, Alberto, Maria and Carlo, suddenly became quiet and shy. The severity of these nobles, they were also noble, had impressed them, and they had understood immediately that there was no argument here. So they went with them, and Carlo saw his plans for his house disappearing more and more. And so they were led into a school. There they were greeted by the students and the teacher. They were asked to sit down and they had to start learning. They had to learn to read and write, in the language they had spoken in their human lives. All the students who were there spoke the same language they had once spoken. There was no turning back now, they had to start now to learn. But these strict people left again, and there were friendly, loving teachers there. And so they had to go to these schools and just start learning, writing, reading, arithmetic and much more besides. At first they were taught the bare essentials. After all, there was so much they had to be taught about: where they were, how long they had been staying here, what intellectual level they were at, what they had missed, what they had done wrong. There was so much they had to be taught about. And now they suddenly found it very interesting that they were being taught and instructed in this way, and so they became diligent. They also saw that they did not have to be embarrassed in front of the others, that the others did not know much more than they did. In this way they were also taught about God's creation and about the saints of heaven. Now they heard who the Madonna was, and they heard about Christ, about his task, and they heard about the necessity of human life, about the meaning and purpose of life. And they heard about the influence that both the good and the evil spirit worlds have on people. They also heard that one must work in the spirit world. And so they were promised that if they studied hard, they would one day be able to pursue a wonderful profession in the spirit world. So these three kept going back to their house and back to the village, and Carlo, who had believed that he could claim land on his own, now had to experience and see that a higher power controls all of this, and that in the divine realm everything is God's property, and that it must first be earned and acquired if one wants to come into possession of an object or anything else. And so he was able to experience how beings came and began to work and build very close to the house in which he lived with his parents. But they were unknown and strange beings to him. He certainly got into conversation with them, and now he saw where this spiritual material came from, with which a house could be built, and he saw how work had to be done, exactly as people did who worked hard on earth. Now he came to the realization that work had to be done in the kingdom of heaven, too, and that this pre-heaven, where he was with his parents, was nothing other than a place of work and learning for those who were still spiritually low, who were not malicious in nature and not too guilty, but who had retained a certain simple disposition from their earthly life. These are brothers and sisters who rise from below and who still need to be treated with a lot of patience and kindness. They are taught to work and to be obedient, and they also need to be initiated into the virtues. These three did not stay together for long. They had to separate again and go to a communal house to prove that they are capable of living together with others who are strangers to them, of sharing with them, of dealing with their peculiarities and their own will, which everyone has, and of living alongside each other in peace. This task still lay ahead of these three. In this way, they had the opportunity to take a big step forward in the spiritual world. Later on, the path to their new earthly life was to be smoothed for them in such a way that something of what they had been taught in the spiritual world would remain in the depths of their souls. In this way, the spirit world of God takes care of those who return, who are on the ascent, who live modestly, even feel happy in poverty. In this way, they will get to know many things in the divine world that they did not know and did not want to know on earth. They will be taught with a lot of patience and with a lot of kindness. And those who come from a modest earthly life are very quickly satisfied with life in the spiritual world. They make no demands, they are quickly satisfied. And the spiritual world takes all of this into account. It is different with those who come from a spoiled life, they have to be treated very differently. So, dear brothers and sisters, I gave you a detailed report about these spiritual brothers and sisters and their ascent, that it is also difficult for them to settle into the spiritual world and to be obedient, and that only as much is demanded of each one who returns as one may demand of him. Of those who were so simple and modest in spirit, not so much can be demanded of them. But the further one ascends, one is obliged to greater spiritual merits and achievements, and one will be tested on all of this. And so one can progress and advance. This heavenly world, this new world, is also to be a world, he will be happy. For they have no demands, they are quickly satisfied and sometimes happier in spirit than someone who is several steps above them, but who experiences great disappointment on his return home and does not find his way around in the new world so quickly and delays his own ascent through his personal attitude, through his dissatisfaction, through his opinion that he has, but also through his vices, through his immodesty, through the demands that he makes, through his need for recognition that he has. For many come and believe that he is a respected spiritual being and that he deserves to be received by the high spirit world of God and that he will be granted a very special, glorious heaven. So disappointments are experienced by some and surprises by others. So, dear brothers and sisters, I have given you an insight into the life in the afterlife of those who have lived a modest existence on earth and who are on the ascent. So may you, dear brothers and sisters, be blessed, and may your thoughts and your will for good be blessed, so that you can work under the blessing of God. Greetings from God. Experience report from Spirit Teacher Joseph through his mediator Beatrice Brunner in the hall on Mar 1 Quartington Stress, Direct Template, tape recording next case. December 2, 1970. Paula, a viable belief in God is of great importance. How an unbelieving woman became aware after her death that life goes on. Control Spirit, greetings from God. Dear brothers and sisters, a sister named Paula is speaking to you. She speaks of her retreat and her ascent. So may God's blessing permeate you in this hour. May you be able to raise your hearts and souls and expand your knowledge. Greetings from God. Paula, I greet you with your greetings. Greetings from God. My name was Paula, I say, was Paula. I will tell you about my earthly life. I will only touch on it briefly, but will then explain in more detail my entry into the spiritual world. As a human being, I could not believe in God. Of course, I could not believe in life after death or that there is a spiritual world. So I did not believe in spirits. For me, there was no God. I always mocked and laughed at my fellow human beings when they spoke about God or religion. Based on my knowledge, I explained to them that there could not be a God at all. But I tried to be fair in life. I tried to live right and sometimes did something good for a poor person. I supported poor people, I loved justice and peace. So I did everything I could to lead a better and higher life. I was not poor in earthly goods. But I simply could not believe, because so many terrible things had already happened in the world and were still happening, and that seemed to me to be an obstacle to believing in a God. Well, I don't want to dwell on that anymore. I would just like to mention the following. I was in a painful sickbed for a few weeks before I was allowed to leave this world. When I was in my sickbed in the last hours of my earthly life, I could see things that seemed strange to me. I could still think clearly, and so I imagined that what I saw was fantasy or a dream. I was ill, I was in pain, I was getting injections, and so I could think that I was no longer in complete control of myself and that such images would appear before me. I also heard people talking. I saw my deceased mother, and she seemed to be pleading for me. She always said, my child was good and tried to live a right life. The fact that my daughter couldn't believe cannot be her fault alone. One should be a little lenient with her in this regard. That's what I always heard her say. Now and then I saw, as it seemed to me, strange figures. They were dressed very elegantly, but they were dressed in the way you often see in plays in the theater, where the actors are dressed in long, wide, flowing robes from an old time. So sometimes when I was watching I thought to myself, am I actually in the theater? Am I watching a play? What is it? I did not believe in life after death. As I mentioned, I did not believe that there are invisible beings that can make themselves visible to the dying. But the way they were dressed did not seem to me like people you usually see walking around on the street and in houses. They had such long, wide, flowing robes, and they seemed very elegant. I could not understand them properly either. It seemed to me as if they were far away, as if I had to listen from a distance to what was being said. But then they were gone again, and I did not see nor no longer heard them. I only saw my relatives around me again. But I was too tired and too weak to speak. But this looking, this seeing kept coming back. Again and again these beings were there, and again I heard my mother praying for me. And so the moment came when I could separate myself from the body. Then I clearly heard my mother's voice saying, "Now it's done, the separation has taken place." I also saw my mother very clearly, but then I saw her disappear. I had the feeling as if I was being lifted out of my bed by a gust of wind and as if the wind was carrying me away. That's what I felt. But I suddenly felt light, I was no longer in pain. It was a pleasant feeling to be lifted and carried like that. But I didn't see anyone and didn't hear anyone speaking. The only thing I thought I heard was a very specific rustling in a specific tone, and I assumed it was the wind that had the power to carry me away. So I escaped, I fled from the house where I had lived. They carried me out and it happened so quickly. But then I felt myself sitting down. Suddenly it became a little dark around me, I could no longer see any light, it was twilight. Now I had the strength to get up, I was lying there in a forest. I got up and looked around. I was frightened because I thought, at this time of day I am still in the forest. But now it is high time that I leave the forest and go home. I must say that when I was alive I loved the forest so much and spent a lot of time in the forest. That was how I thought, humanly, I didn't even know that I had died. On the one hand it was like a dream for me, on the other hand I felt it was a great liberation and release. I felt that something had happened, but I couldn't explain it. I could think just as I had when I was alive, and since I was an unbeliever it was difficult for me to change my mind, because I didn't believe that there was life after death. I didn't believe that there was a world invisible to mankind. I was full of disbelief and so I thought in a human way, I'm in the forest and now it's time for me to go home. But everything seemed strange to me. I knew the paths I had taken exactly, I even knew the trees, very specific bushes and the forest clearings. I knew everything and now I ran away and looked for my familiar paths. But I couldn't find them, everything was strange. Now I thought about how long I had been here and whether I had somehow got lost. I couldn't really get my mind right, everything was strange to me. And so I just went on, I just kept running. I must have moved for hours according to your human terms. And what I found strange, the twilight always remained. I was afraid of the night, because then I could have lost the way completely. But it didn't come night, it was always the case that I could still see the way. The twilight, the atmosphere, was such that you could always have expected night. And so I became uncertain and began to be afraid. Then I called my husband's name, and I called the names of my children, who were probably already grown up but who came and went a lot. None of my relatives answered me. I could call as loudly as I wanted. And yet, the closer I listened, when I stood still and was attentive, I had the feeling that there were others near me. I heard a rustling, I heard talking. I called the names, but nothing, absolutely nothing came near me. Then it occurred to me that I could still call the dog. We had a dog and he loved me and was always so attentive. His name was Nero. And so I called out that name as loudly as I could. It wasn't long before a dog came to me. Nero. But it wasn't the Nero who still lived with us, it was the dog who had died years before. It was our old dog, who I had loved very much and who was so devoted to me. He was also called Nero. When he became old, sick and blind, he had to be killed. We were very sad about that and it hurt me so much that to overcome our pain we got a new dog as quickly as possible, and gave him the same name in memory of our Nero. And I was quite astonished, the old Nero was there, who had long been dead to me. He jumped up at me and showed his joy at meeting me.